this is Allison Sheridan of the NoSilicast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, August 8th, 2010, and this is show number 272. Well, the chat room was worried that I wouldn't make it back in time, but we did. I don't know what Steve did driving back as we came back from my mother's 90th birthday party down in San Diego, but he got us home on time. I was able to do a quick wipe down of the car and get back on the air right on time. So many thanks to everyone who wished my mother well on her 90th birthday. She had a great time. We went out on the Hornblower, which is a rather large little cruise ship kind of thingy that goes around in the harbor down there and just puts around. You have champagne brunch and the whole thing. And it was really, really nice. She actually teared up a little bit at the end, and it takes a lot for my mom to tear up. So it was definitely a success. And again, I told her about all your well wishes, and she was really happy about that. Hopefully we'll get her on the show again soon. Well, the European podcasting tour is really coming into shape now. We've got venues, we've got Facebook invites, we've got photo walks, we have everything except the only thing you care about, and that's content for the show while we're gone. Now, Katie Floyd of the Mac Power Users has graciously agreed to host the show on August 28th, but only with the promise that you guys would send her contributions. Her email address is Katie, K-A-T-I-E, at MacPowerUsers.com. So shoot her an email if you think you can help out. The good news is that we're actually going to do chit-chat across the pond with Bart and I in his house and Katie on the United States side of the pond. That's going to be just so trippy. I can't believe it. That's going to be really, really fun. So get your reviews ready for Katie and help her make this a great show. Speaking of helping the show, if you're not comfortable with the microphone, but you wish you could do something to help the show go, consider making your next Amazon purchase through podfeet.com. If you buy from Amazon already, this will not cost you a dime, but a very small percentage of the purchase price actually goes towards the Podfeet coffers. When you go to podfeet.com, in the upper left is an Amazon search window. All you have to do is search for something through there. It takes you inside to Amazon, and anything you buy while you're in there benefits the show. Back to school's on the horizon. Your brother's birthday's coming up. The holidays are coming. It's an easy, pain-free way to contribute. So give it a try, would you? That'd be great. All right, we're going to kick into some real meat here now. I've had the iPad for whatever, since the day it came out, and I've read 5 books on it so far. I thought it might be fun to contrast and compare the different book reading apps: Apple's iBooks, Amazon's Kindle app, Barnes & Noble app, and I think they call it the Barnes & Noble e-reader, and the Borders app. I probably won't be able to avoid waxing sentimental about analog books as well. I really do kind of miss the analog book, but you know what? Times, they are a-changing. So the specific criteria on which I decided to judge each app, and I kind of extended it beyond this a little bit, though, is ease of reading, including how pretty is it? You know, is it pleasing to the eye? What kind of controls do they have? Like, is screen brightness right on the front, or do you have to go dig for it? Fonts and bookmarks, those kinds of things. Third criteria was, how easy is it to acquire books, both the user interface and the book availability itself? And finally, syncing between devices. All right, let's start out with iBooks. It's interesting that it's free, but oddly, it does not come on the iPad. You have to go get it. And you have to go get it on the iPhone as well. I'm wondering what was done to ensure ahead of time that they, or I'm thinking that might have been done to ensure ahead of time they weren't accused of monopolistic behavior before they captured the entire market. It doesn't look like they're in any danger doing that, but you know what I mean. If it was built in, then the other ones wouldn't get a lot of traction. In any case, downloading it for the iPad and iPhone now is easy peasy. iBooks, if you haven't seen it, is positively gorgeous. Only Apple would spend the programming dollars on making the pages curl under your finger as you turn the pages. Once the novelty is worn off, though, you pretty much just tap the margin to flip the pages like in any other app. The animation does come at a price. iBooks was one of the slowest to display text when first launched. It took about 6 seconds from when the book first displays until you can actually start reading. Man, is my racket strung a little too tight that 6 seconds? Oh, that's a huge inconvenience, you know? A lot of pressure. Hurry up, gotta read! Anyway, controls work reasonably well on iBooks. A tap on the screen shows in the upper right the option to dim the screen, which is probably the single most important feature you need on a book on an iPad. Unlike e-ink displays, if you turn the lights off to read at night, the iPad or iPhone will blind you, they're so bright. You can change the font size on iBooks too, but it's done by pushing a big or small A with a fair amount of delay on the size change. So it's kind of hard to tell, have I hit the big A enough times that I'm at the biggest or smallest size? Takes a little while to get used to. You can also change the page color from white to sepia. You have instant access to a search window, which might be super handy if you were reading a textbook, but I haven't found I really needed it in reading fiction. Apple has enhanced the bookmarking feature in the latest version. You used to only have a highlighting feature, which again is super cool for textbook studies, but I ended up with 50 of these highlighted book sections when I just wanted to see the latest section I'd highlighted. It is kind of cool to be able to highlight exactly where you fell asleep, not just the two pages where you started napping. Now you do have a true bookmark capability on top of the highlighting. Buying books is super easy because I'm already immersed in the Apple ecosystem, of which Nightwise is so very fond. Because you're on an iOS device, you already have an Apple ID to buy things, so you don't have to enter your credit card info or anything like that. You're already mainlining Apple content, let's face it. Searching for books is easy and downloading is practically instantaneous. We forget how very small text files are now that we're all dealing with audio and video, so it's a constant delight to see an entire book drop into your library in literally less than a minute. Now, Dan Eckmeyer in the chat room just let us know that VoiceOver works perfectly with iBooks. So if you're visually impaired or you just want to have the book read to you, you can actually use VoiceOver to have a book read to you. I like that idea now that I think about it, because sometimes I'm just too lazy to read. I want to do something else at the same time. Well, the one big downside to iBooks is actually the book availability. The reason I even started to look at the other readers is because I couldn't find the books I wanted to read in the iBook store. Having the competition and options is fantastic, but I do notice that before I sit down to read each night, I have to remember which app did I use to download the book I'm currently reading. iBooks does make it easy to download a sample first to see if you like it, which is positively fantastic. They don't just give you a couple of pages either, it's more like 50 pages, so you'll know for sure whether you want to buy it. The display of the library is gorgeous, just like real books on a wood shelf, but it's missing an important feature. I really want to be able to separate books that I've already read from the ones I haven't read yet, but it doesn't have that feature. I did stumble across one cool thing. I was reading a PDF online, and I noticed a button to suck it into iBooks. That was really swell, because now I have two separate bookcases, one for books and one for PDFs. There's just a little button at the top to switch between them. I loaded iBooks on my iPhone, downloaded a book I was reading on the iPad, and in about a second and a half, the book had jumped to right where I was reading on the iPad. I think syncing devices without any work on my part is a really important feature and becomes critical in my comparison of all these applications. So bottom line on iBooks, I'm thinking like a B+, with the only markdowns being lack of books, kind of an important feature, and the slowness to actually load the books. I guess I wasn't wild about the font changes either. So that finishes up iBooks for now. Kindle. Next up is the Amazon Kindle app. It runs on the iPad, the iPhone, the iPod Touch, Android phones, your Macs, and your PCs, and of course, your Kindle. I haven't checked yet, but I'm pretty sure there's a Kindle app for my toaster. When you open a book in the Kindle app, you get instant gratification. I mean zero lag to start reading. It's not nearly as pretty as iBooks. No tricky page curling here. On iBooks, when you view a book in landscape mode, you get two pages side by side that look like a real book. But in the Kindle app, you get one giant wide page that makes it really hard to read on the iPad. I mean, you actually have to turn your head from side to side. In portrait mode, it looks just fine. And again, a quick tap in the margin flips the page. Luckily, I read lying down, so I lock the page in portrait mode. I lay down, and sure enough, it's in the right aspect ratio, so it's easy to read. Like iBooks, controls work very well right in the book. I prefer the font controls in the Kindle app. You get five choices of font size, so you know you've got the biggest or the smallest font. You have three choices for screen color: white, black with white text, and sepia. You can also control the screen brightness right from these controls. Adding a bookmark is as easy as tapping the bookmark icon in the upper right. Acquiring new books isn't quite as smooth on the Kindle app because it takes you into a web browser, basically just to the Amazon store. While this is annoying, you are rewarded by the fact that there's actually books to buy when you get there. Huh, go figure. I have pretty much found every book I've looked for in the Amazon store, which is certainly a big plus. Most people these days probably have an Amazon account, at least geeks like us do, So there's pretty much no setup required for the average user here either. Buy a book, and again, it instantly comes into the Kindle app. You can delete a book, and it becomes archived. Or at least I think that's how it works. Once archived, you can retrieve it right from the Kindle app by going to Archive Books and selecting Restore. Since books don't take up much disk space, I might not use that, but it might make a good way to organize the books into the ones I have and haven't read, like I was complaining about on iBooks. Now, syncing is a dream on the Kindle app. Open a book on a different device than you were reading on the day before, and it pops up and says, "Hey, you want to be the furthest location?" First, that confused me, thinking they meant I was far away from some virtual home base, but I realized they were being grammatically proper here. Farthest means physical distance. Furthest is used in the more abstract sense. In this case, furthest along in the book is what they meant. Grammar aside, I love this feature in Kindle. I have to admit, with the recent price drops of the Kindle, they now have a smaller Wi-Fi-only version that's only $139, and it's still got the big the 6-inch screen on it. I've been thinking, might be nice to have one of those for the beach or pool reading opportunities. Like I needed a gadget in my life, right? Of course I do. I don't have enough gadgets. But seriously, I think it might be something I would want. A little stocking stuffer, maybe. Anyway, bottom line on the Kindle, I'd go with A-, with the only markdown being the landscape reading mode being pretty unusable. That's far outweighed by the book availability, the speed, and the ability to read on every single device you might possibly own. Well, normally Connor waits until after the show is produced to correct me so that I have to put corrections in the next week or maybe not. But he just pointed out to me during the live chat that in iBooks, if you delete a book, so you go to edit and then hit delete, it just looks like it deleted it, which seems like a bad thing. But it turns out if you go into the store side of iBooks, there's a button that says purchased books, and you can click on it. And if you've deleted a book, there's a button that says re-download. So I guess you actually can do archiving of books in iBooks as well, but it certainly was not as intuitive as it was on the Kindle app. All right, let's keep going. I like Borders as a physical bookstore, so I thought I'd try out their ebook reader too. I'm not immersed in the Borders ecosphere, so I had to enter my credit card to start an account in a web browser. That was almost a non-starter, as I was already in my jammy jams for the night and I was tucked into bed, but I knew I owed it to all of you to do a good review, so I sacrificed myself, tootled downstairs, and got my wallet. I bought the book Damon, the one all the nerds are talking about, after previewing it over on iBooks. That's when the joy stopped. After entering my credit card info and address and phone, it said my phone number wasn't recognized. It took me 4 tries to figure out the format they wanted. For crying out loud, don't make an open text field if you're going to insist on a specific format. Or at least give me a hint as to how you wanted it entered. But then it got worse. After cracking the secret code on the phone entering puzzle, I was told that my book would begin downloading when I opened the Barnes & Noble app. But it didn't. I went back to the web. It said my book should be in the app, but it wasn't. I flipped back and forth and came back in. I went to iBooks to keep reading the preview, hoping that maybe by morning, Damon would be waiting for me in the Barnes & Noble app, but it wasn't. I even wrote a scathing email to the Barnes & Noble people about that. Disgusted, I moved on to start reviewing the Borders app. And to my great embarrassment, there was the book Damon. For those of you like Connor who actually pay attention to my blathering, you probably already noticed I was reviewing the Borders app, but I'd switched halfway through to Barnes & Noble. Remember when I said it gets confusing to remember where you put that darn book if you get all these e-readers? All right, Borders is unjustly accused. Okay, they were justly accused about the phone number, but the missing book, that wasn't them. So let me talk about the Borders app. The books are displayed on pretty white IKEA-looking shelves with rich, beautiful colored covers. Even the free books that come with the app, like Grimm's Fairy Tales and Pride and Prejudice, have pretty covers. Unlike iBooks, where they look like a generic brand, label cat food in the grocery store. Well, now that my memory is coming back to me, the Borders app lets you shop for books in-app, showing you bestsellers, top 50, and just released, and other options. But when you choose a book, that's when it takes you to Safari to complete the purchase. Not ideal, but better than the Amazon method, I think. The Borders app gives you 2 screens for your library, the regular library and I'm Reading. It's not quite what I need to organize my books, but at least it's a start. So let's actually start reading. Unfortunately, like Kindle, the Border app gives you 1 giant wide page when reading in landscape mode. The controls for the page, though, are easy to use and intuitive. You can change between 4 fonts, the other ones didn't let you change fonts, and you get a slider for font size, which is pretty nice. Brightness slider is right at your fingertips, as is a bookmark icon. I like the bookmark in the Borders app the best visually. It folds down the page and makes it this pretty burgundy Borders red. Page animation has the most flexibility of any of the four apps. You can choose no animation, page flip, page fade, or page curl. Now, you can't slowly curl the page, though, like Apple, so don't get all excited. And, of course, I changed to page flip pretty quickly. You do have access to the brightness control from within the book, and it has a night reading mode that basically makes it white text on black. Now, I did notice that it blinks, though, that when you first turn it on, you go to the book, it brings it up, and then it blinks and it repaints the screen. Kind of irritating. Now, opening the book only takes a couple of seconds, not as fast as Amazon, but not as slow as Barnes & Noble or iBooks. Every time you get to a new chapter, though, there's this lag when you see a pop-up saying opening new chapter. It makes me think they only buffer a chapter at a time, which makes no sense at all on a tiny little text file. They actually have the, there's a little slider along the bottom in most of these apps that show you where you are in the book. And the, let's see, this is the Borders app I'm talking about. It goes forward, 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 and then it's got like a little red line that's kind of following it. And all of a sudden it jumps backwards when you finish a chapter. So it was a little difficult, a little bit annoying. As far as book availability goes, I haven't done an exhaustive search, but I have been able to find the books I was looking for on Borders so far. I expect that the only reader that will have the availability problem will be iBooks. Borders has created their ebook reader app to run on the Mac and PC, iOS devices, the BlackBerry, and Android. I haven't checked for that toaster app yet on that one either. The Mac version only works on Intel-based Macs, but they promise that support for the PowerPC Macs is coming. Not sure I'd hold your breath on that, but whatever. I downloaded the Borders app to my Mac, and as soon as I authenticated, it downloaded the book Daemon and opened it to the page I'd been reading on the iPad. I don't like the format much on the Mac. It's very wide, again, making me turn my head from side to side to read. See, my glasses have a very precise, narrow field of focus from side to side, so this might be a contributor to how much that annoyed me on the Mac. But while they did let you change the shape of the window, there was a limit to how narrow you could make it, so I couldn't make it the right width. The main thing, though, is that they did sync me right up so I can read just about anywhere on my device. Or on any device, I should say. When I opened the book on the Borders app on my iPhone, it was not synced to where I'd left off on the night before on the iPad. However, when I finished reading on the iPhone, the iPad did know where I'd left off. For some reason, they seem to be giving us syncing only in one direction. Now, I know that I can have auto-syncing in iBooks and Kindle, so there's no way I'm accepting this lack of an important feature from Borders. I also installed the Borders app on my BlackBerry 9600, and while the app looks fine and has some pre-installed samples and free books, it will not accept my credentials to log into Borders to get the book I'm currently reading. Now, just to make sure it wasn't operator trouble, I even logged out on my iPhone and re-logged in to verify I remembered my login info. So in this case, it's not me being a spaz. The error says your email address is wrong. So Steve thinks that he suggested perhaps the BlackBerry app is actually accessing my email address of the BlackBerry itself, which is not the one with which I registered with Borders. So I don't like it if that's true, because that would mean it's accessing data on the BlackBerry that I didn't give it permission to touch. Bottom line on Borders. While I'd had more versatility on how to flip the pages and easier font changes, the delay opening chapters was annoying, I don't like the landscape format, the BlackBerry app wouldn't let me log in, and the lack of syncing to the iPhone was a non-starter. And heck, it didn't even have search to find out where I was in the book. I think Borders gets a C, maybe a C+. And now to the unjustly accused Barnes & Noble app. The Barnes & Noble e-reader is available for the iOS devices, Android, BlackBerry, PC and Mac, and of course their own device, the Nook. It was perfectly easy to search in the Apple App Store for it, but of course it had to be harder on the BlackBerry. First I looked in BlackBerry World, their App Store, but it wasn't there. Next I went to the Barnes & Noble website on my Mac, got the full URL, typed it into the BlackBerry browser, but there it told me, go to bn.com instead, and it would have a link to download the e-reader app. Well, how am I supposed to know to do that? Well, I eventually got it loaded on my BlackBerry, but dang, that was a lot harder than it should have been. The good news is that, unlike the Borders app, the Barnes & Noble e-reader actually works on my BlackBerry. Let me log into my account and everything. Buying books in the Barnes & Noble e-reader took me to a website, which isn't my favorite way, but it worked. They have the option of letting you download free samples like the other services. I mentioned again because it's one of the coolest features of e-readers is that you could check out a book first. I bought so many books over the years and got like 10 or 20 pages in and realized the whole book was going to be a big slog. But you know, if I paid for it, dang it, I'm going to read it all the way through. I'm disciplined that way. But now I can sample a book, and if it's a good one, I'll be sure to hit that buy button to find out what happens next. The iPad version is very capable. 5 font sizes, easily selectable, line spacing options I didn't see on any of the other apps, 8 font choices, and complete control over what color text, pages, highlights, and links are. I'm not kidding you when I say complete control. They give you the whole color wheel to play with for each of these. This could be handy if you're super picky about the way things look, and just so no one can mess it up, all your perfectly selected colors, you can save them as a theme. And they have a bunch of themes to choose from, too. That struck me as a feature they did because they could, not necessarily because they need to, but, you know, maybe somebody'd really like it. The app does come with those 5 pre-built themes I mentioned: the printed page, nightlight, Earl Grey, butter pecan, and mocha. Started to sound like ice cream towards the end there. Dang, now I'm hungry. All right, in the app, you can change the brightness, which is just how I like it. And unlike the Borders app, the Barnes & Noble e-reader does have search. Bookmarks are pretty subtle, though. Down in the lower right, there is a teeniest, tiniest, little, teeny, tiny plus sign, maybe like 5-point font, and a little diagonal line. That is evidently your clue to touch there to cause a bookmark. Sadly, these bookmarks did not transfer over to my iPhone or the BlackBerry version of the Barnes & Noble e-reader, and those devices also didn't do any kind of syncing for me at all. Big, fat bummer. Carrying on after that fundamental bummer, I discovered that the Barnes & Noble e-reader allows you to touch, hold, and then drag your finger to highlight a section of text. You can then either save it as a simple highlight, or you can choose to add a note and save it. Those highlights and notes come up when you tap on the Go To in the menu bar, which is where you also found bookmarks. I should mention that landscape reading was just like all the other non-iBook apps, one giant wide app. How hard would it be for them to make a two-up page? Seriously. No one at Borders, Barnes & Noble, or Amazon thought of this? Has Apple got like a patent on it or something? Oh well, if you are reading textbooks, I think those little notes to stick up with highlights and stuff could be really, really handy. So maybe you do your work school book reading over on Barnes & Noble. The Barnes & Noble e-reader was the only app that would allow you to view the inside jacket info of the book you were currently reading. You can see the title, author, copyright, publisher, all that kind of stuff. Oddly enough, though, on the Barnes & Noble e-reader, on the iPhone version, you can actually edit that information. So I changed The Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nest to be written by Allison Sheridan. Why would they let you do that? What a bizarre feature. All right, Barnes & Noble is the only company of the 4 that allows you to share your books with your friends. They call it Lend Me, and it works with iPad, Android, but not on the BlackBerry. Oddly, they didn't say either way on the iPhone. It was real specific on the other 3, but it didn't say on the iPhone. Lend Me allows you to loan a book for 14 days to a friend, during which time you can't read it, but when it comes back, you can read it again. Now, you can only do this once, but since no one else you loan any books at all, I guess we should be grateful for that feature. They also are very careful to say most books can be lent. Evidently, it's up to the publishers whether to allow this or not. I hunted around and read instructions online, but I actually could never figure out how to loan a book out. They just said, send it to someone in your address book, but how would you do that? Well, anyway, bottom line for the Barnes & Noble e-reader. Even though they had a ton of options on colors and other controls, and it's the only one that lets you lend out books, the lack of syncing is the kiss of death now. Now that I know I can have it with iBooks and Kindle, I am just not going to accept that. If they had syncing, the buying experience and book availability might be enough to bring it up to being the top contender. Well, I put pictures in the show notes of the 4 different books just so you could see what they look like in their landscape format, and I thought maybe that would kind of help you guys get a feel for how it looks. All right, bottom line now. I've told you about the 4 major ebook readers for our portable devices, but we need to pick a clear winner. Now, a normal person would just say, I like this one the best, but not an engineer like me. Let's talk about how I'm going to figure out which one's the best. Let's say you're trying to decide which is the best book reader, and you've studied 4 of them. You have a set of criteria against which you'd like to judge them, like book availability, buying experience, syncing, that kind of stuff. Well, some stuff is way more important than other stuff, right? Like buying experience might be super important and so is syncing, but being able to color the page is only mildly important, and how fast the book comes up, between 3 and 7 seconds, that doesn't hardly matter at all. So what you do is you assign weighted values to those criteria. You assign a 9 to super important, 3 for important, and 1 for not very important. You with me so far? This is going to be called a QFD is what we're building. It stands for Quality Functional Deployment. Okay, I don't know what that means, but let's keep going. So we've got our four things we're going to check, compare, and we've got a set of criteria, and we've assigned a 1, 3, or 9 to each one of those criteria. Next, you judge each of the choices against that criteria, again, assigning a 9, 3, or a 1 to how well it meets the criteria. So book availability is really, really important, so that gets a 9 in importance. But the iBooks app doesn't have a lot of books, so it gets a 1 in its value against that criteria. You multiply the two together, and the iBook apps get 9, it gets 9 times 1, or 9 for that particular criteria. Kindle, on the other hand, has every book in the known universe, or at least it seems that way, and so it gets a 9 in that category. So its score would be 9 times 9, or 81 on that particular value. What you see right here is the power of the QFD. Because the numbers are so far apart, the cool stuff bubbles to the top really quickly. I mean, an 81 beats a 9 by a mile. All right, so I took the four book reader apps, and I measured them against all the criteria I could think of. I did the weighted values thing, I ran all the math, and I put the chart in the show notes. Here's what I found. Borders came in last, hurt very badly by the lack of syncing, which is critically important, and the number of devices they support, since the BlackBerry syncing didn't actually work as advertised. Barnes & Noble came in third, again, hurt very much by the lack of syncing, and I didn't really like the buying experience. I feel badly about slamming them, because this week they put themselves up for sale, so I kind of feel like I'm kicking a guy when he's down. When I was starting this exercise, I was certain I would choose iBooks over all the others because I thought it was so pretty. But you know what? Kindle beat it on a couple of fronts. It's not as pretty, but book availability being the number one thing you need in a book reader, and iBooks still coming up short, was the kiss of death. If you have a lot of devices, Kindle wins there too, and Kindle is much faster to bring up the books. While Kindle is kind of utilitarian, it was the easy winner. It got a score of 254, with iBooks at 196, Barnes & Noble at 174, and Borders at 154. I think Kindle is good enough that I would consider getting a Kindle reader just for those rare times I want to read outside or I'm somewhere where I'd worry about the iPad getting stolen or lost. So the bottom line in my expert and scientific study is Kindle for the win. Last week, when I was talking to Katie about her hosting the show, in yet another weak moment, she suggested that she do the full court press and do the show live on Ustream. I thought that was a grand idea, but I figured it might help her out if I gave her a few instructions. So what do you think I did to create some documentation for her? I grabbed my trusty screen steps, of course. It was Sunday night, time for the live show anyway, so as I did each setup step, I told screen steps to take a screenshot for me. Later that night, after I'd produced the show, I went back into Screen Steps and I started writing the instructions, the why of each why each screenshot had been taken, explain why I was picking the certain things in those windows. I was able to annotate the images with arrows, sequence step numbers, and drew boxes around it to reference things in the text. Made it easy to write, but dang, I go through a lot of weird stuff to produce the show because it was long. I realized how many people had helped with one little itty-bitty key here and a configuration bit there and, oh man, a lot of little things. Well, if you'd like a documentation tool that makes your job easier and actually encourages you to do the documentation you know you're supposed to do, then check out ScreenSteps at ScreenSteps.com. Don't forget to use my coupon code NOCILLA in all capital letters for 25% off the incredibly inexpensive price of $40 for the standard desktop version and $80 for the pro version.
In episode 188, back in January 2009, I described my office's conversion from a dying high-end photocopier to a cheap, networkable, Brother duplexing laser printer. We use that printer all the time, and we're still on the starter cartridge. So our campaign to save the world's forests must be working. Our small office used to go through cases of computer and copier paper. Now we use ScanSnaps to scan directly to PDF, share files on network drives, and rarely print anything. When we do print, printing both sides of the paper cuts tree loss in half. I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that my daughter is starting a law school that requires students to take exams on Windows computers. Fortunately, she has a great scholarship, so I can help her with gear, not tuition. Trust me, buying gear is a lot more fun than paying tuition. We skipped wimpy netbooks for a 13.3-inch Acer Timeline X 3820 running on an i3, a good full-sized keyboard, and 8 advertised hours of replaceable battery. At about 700 and already falling, this powerful laptop is a reminder of the Apple tax we pay to buy Steve's turtlenecks. I added a Fuji ScanSnap S1300 portable scanner. Works with her Macs and the new Acer. Rated 10 double-sided pages a minute. About 220. Shop around. Office Depot had the Brother HL5370DW duplexing printer on sale this week for $180. Less than I paid back in early 09 and Wi-Fi enabled, too. There's a link in the show notes to a Brother video about the printer's features. Even if you aren't interested in laser printers, the video is a great example of an effective product feature promotion. Be sure to visit podfeet.com to see the printer unboxing picture I sent Allison. Brother printers are compatible with all breeds, Mac, Windows, and Linux, Wi-Fi enabled. So remember, no leash is required when your sales geek tries to add a USB cable to your shopping cart.
Well, thanks, George. Those are a lot of good suggestions. People in the chat room are talking about future laser printer purchases. Might not be a bad idea. And I don't know. I'm still not sure about that wimpy netbook thing. You said you skipped the wimpy netbook for the 13.3-inch Acer. It's got Windows on it, though. Did you at least take Windows off and maybe put Linux on it? That would be good. Well, anyway, sounds like you got her all set up with the ScanSnap and the Brother printer and everything. My problem with the laser printers is they keep giving me free printers every time I buy a Mac. So we have actually more printers than we even know how to use. But thanks again, George. I always like your reviews. They're often all over the map and all different things. And yes, that printer unboxing photo was perfect. Well, next week, Kyle is going on a road trip with his buddies, and he's going to be driving his 10-year-old Honda Accord about 800 miles or more. Now, as a parent, one would automatically take pause because of the age of the car. You know, the boy out on his own, possibility of breaking down in the road. Well, you know what? Kyle's car is taken care of by Honda Bob. So we both said, have a great trip, Kyle. All right, so first we told him to check the oil, the tire pressure, and the radiator fluid level. That's just common sense. But that peace of mind when driving your car or your child driving their car is something we don't take for granted. If you live in the LA or Orange County areas and you drive a Honda or an Acura, you should give Honda Bob a call at 562-531-2321 or send him an email at hdabob@aol.com. HDA Bob's mobile service is not affiliated with Honda, Acura, or Honda Worldwide. It's that time of the week again. It's time for Chit Chat Across the Pond with Bart Bouchatz from BartB.ie. How are you this lovely, what is it, August morning? Afternoon, evening?
It's 10 past 6 in the evening, so I don't think that counts as morning, whatever else it might count as. Or lovely.
Yes. Oh, it's not lovely.
Weather.
Well, it was foggy on a run on the beach. Does that? It was probably, you know, 65 degrees or something. It was freezing. You know, it was nasty.
If 65 degrees counts as freezing, I may revise my opinion on what you should pack.
Yeah, we've been discussing that. Don is making my life impossible. His latest advice was smart but casual. I got to look smart? This is a lot of pressure.
Smart but casual basically means not tattered.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll see. Well, we'll get to that part later. So we better start in with our security light. We got a lot of stuff going on today.
Indeed we do. First up, a reminder. We talked about it last week that Microsoft were going to release a patch to the dreaded LNK vulnerability. They were as good as their word, and they have indeed done so. Perhaps unsurprisingly, attacks against it are increasing, quote-unquote, exponentially.
Yeesh.
So if you have not patched, you absolutely positively have to do so ASAP.
Is there anything in particular they're doing in general to people who haven't patched, or is it just they have complete and utter control, so it's a plethora of attacks?
Yeah, the latter. Whatever they'd like to do. That's how they're doing it now.
Because they can.
Exactly.
All right. Well, I did my patches, so I'm good.
This also brings up an issue for people who are still running older versions of Windows, which were not patched, i.e. Windows 2000 and Windows XP Service Pack 1 and Service Pack 2 would be the main ones that spring to mind. It is simply unsafe to use those operating systems. They are now dead. If you're using them, you have to change.
Really?
Yeah, they're not being patched, and they are vulnerable.
Oh, I didn't realize Service Pack 2 wasn't being patched. I wonder how widespread Service Pack 2 is still.
It's still quite widespread. And support for it was officially ended, I believe it was the start of July.
Oh, okay.
It was at Windows 2000. One of them is like literally just a few weeks out of support. But it is not being patched.
Yikes. Okay.
So if you can't upgrade to Service Pack 3 on XP, you need to move to Linux or something, but you just cannot have an internet or even a network-connected computer running Windows 2000 or Windows XP before Service Pack 3.
So you can't do anything about this LNK vulnerability?
Well, I guess you could turn off links.
Yeah.
But that's going to make your experience so unpleasant, you're going to want to upgrade to something else anyway.
Right.
At best, a holding pattern.
Okay, anything else fun from our Windows friends?
Oh, yeah, because last Tuesday was an out-of-band patch, so next Tuesday is the in-band patches, 14 of them.
Okay, are they cheesy ones or are they serious?
8 rated critical, 6 rated important, your standard remote code execution and privilege escalation vulnerabilities. Most are in Windows, 2 are in Office.
Oh, dear.
So okay. Patch again on Tuesday.
So patch now, patch later, patch early, patch often.
Yeah, patch early, patch often, for sure. Next up then, we change tech and we move to our friends in one infinite loop.
Uh-oh. We have an Apple vulnerability?
Yes, but only for our Windows Apple brethren. If that makes any
Windows
sense.
Windows Apple brethren, okay.
This is one I should technically apologize for because I saw this one a week or two ago and decided that it wasn't important because who's still running QuickTime 7? And then Allison pointed out that I was being really stupid because Windows people have no choice but to run QuickTime 7.
I didn't say you were stupid. You said you were stupid, right?
Well, you may have just hinted it and I came to the conclusion.
I opened the door for you to admit it, right?
Exactly. So this has been around for a while. It's a flaw which, it's kind of an odd one, but if the bad guy can trigger the streaming component to log an error in a certain way, it can use that to take over the system.
Okay, so QuickTime streaming, not regular QuickTime.
Not regular QuickTime, so you got to get it to stream. There's a couple of ways you could trick it into doing this error. The bad guys have said they found at least 7 possible vectors, as they call it. But one of those vectors is through something called, what was it, ML something that I kept on getting wrong?
Oh, MILS, IML, ILMS, something like that?
Anyway, it doesn't really matter. Yeah, but all they have to do is put in an overly long URL into one of those files, and that, one, it triggers QuickTime streaming component, and two, it triggers QuickTime streaming component to have conniptions.
So you go to a website that's going to stream a video for you, and that video happens to be in QuickTime streaming format. You're on Windows. You're up to the most recent version of QuickTime for Windows, which is 7.6.6, I think. And you hit that link, and you're dead.
It doesn't have to be video. It can be audio. And you may not even hit a link. It may just be, you know, built in. You know, you go to the website for a radio station or something and it pops up a pop-up that automatically loads in the stream of the radio station. I mean, you know, you don't even have to go do anything special.
Now, first we were worried about putting this one in because it didn't look like there was much you could do about it. But it turns out it's a Belgian site, right? It had a solution for it.
Yeah, now...
That isn't too hard.
No, it isn't. We spent a while debating this and different possible ways of tackling this. And in the end, the simplest solution we came up with was simply to delete the offending QuickTime component.
Well, or rename it.
It isn't there. Well, delete, rename. Make it not be findable.
Right, right.
If you're feeling brave, just delete it, because as soon as Apple releases an update and you install the update, the new version will get copied back and so you'll be fine.
Oh, okay.
Or if you're not that brave, simply rename it to something else.
Yeah, I don't know what it really does to rename it, but I put a link in the show notes to it. It's in Program Files, QuickTime, Qt System, and the file name is quicktimestreaming.qtx. But again, it's in the show notes. So all you do is rename that. You can test whether it's working by going to the open up QuickTime, and you know how you can go to Apple's automatic streaming thing. That simply won't work if you've done it properly.
Yeah, so maybe delete it to deleted.quicktimestreaming.qtx or something like that.
Right. So the good news is that doesn't mean you can't play QuickTime content. It just means
not streaming.
So if people go to my website, I've got a button that says play this in QuickTime. Is that that's mm-hmm. not really streaming though, is it? Or is it?
Not sure, Alice.
I just put a link to the MP3 file on a website.
Yeah, that may I don't know. It all depends on how QuickTime decides it would like to do it.
I know there are different formats for outputting the file where it says, you know, enable for streaming, but this is just a plain old MP3 file. There's nothing tricky bits about it. So if somebody on Windows shuts off the streaming component and tests that, I'd sure like to know the answer to that question. I'm too lazy to test it myself and fire up a Windows VM.
Worst case scenario, they'd have to download the MP3 and then play it rather than just clicking it in the webpage.
Yeah. Okay.
So it wouldn't be terminal. It would just be a minor inconvenience, but a hell of a lot less of an inconvenience being hacked.
Now, I'm hoping we don't get the enjoyment of spending weeks whining about the fact that Apple hasn't patched it yet. I hope this gets done fairly quickly because it's fairly serious.
I wouldn't hold my breath.
Based on past performance, right?
Even though past performance is not a guide to future performance or something like that, whatever that disclaimer is on those ads.
Right, that's what I was thinking about.
But I'd still be inclined to suggest that we shouldn't hold our breath.
It would be pretty poor form of them not to take care of it quickly, since it's not even their own OS they're boogering up.
If anything, that makes me think it's less likely they'll fix it quickly, because Mac users are safe.
All right, anyway. Well, it still counts as security light, because we had a way for you to fix it. It's a little inconvenient. It's a little bit geeky. I mean, you got to drill down to a file and change the name of it or delete it, but it's not too bad. It doesn't. Yes. You didn't have to turn on NoScript to do it. So it did.
Indeed. Okay, last one up then is more PDF fun. This time it's Foxit Reader that has an update that you should apply. They call it a security update, and they list all the nasty things it fixes.
Ah, so Foxit Reader is a replacement for Adobe Acrobat Reader or Preview. Actually, it's a Windows-only program, right?
Yeah, so as far as I know.
I happen to have actually finally figured out what Foxit's been asking me. Foxit's been trying to get me to do updates for a long time, but I didn't actually recognize it. It comes up with this pane that's got a bunch of stuff on the left and an empty pane on the right, and you have to click each thing on the left and say add it to the right and then say go. But that's the way it works. It's really creepy. I hadn't figured out that it was saying your software's out of date is why it's been yelling at me all this time. So I finally figured it out this week. So I told it to go ahead and update. And I just blindly clicked every single thing on the left, told it to go to the right and said update. And one of the things it was trying to update was to enroll me in a paid for application. And when I canceled out of it, I ended up in pop-up window hell. I ended up with a thing telling me that I had access denied was one of the windows that came up. It was very, very poorly done, I thought.
So, okay, well, maybe we need to retract our recommendation of this software, because anything that puts me into pop-up hell is not something I'm prepared to recommend.
Yeah, I was not impressed.
Well, that's a pity.
Yeah.
They had everything to play for, and they seem to have kicked it wide.
I've never heard that term. I get what you mean, but I'd never heard that. You and your sports analogies. Okay.
My poor sports analogies.
Is that it for Security Light?
It's it for Security Light. We're now kicking up a gear to Security Medium.
Oh, wait a minute, wait a minute. What's Security Medium?
Oh, it's where we have a sort of a solution, but it's not really great.
So, what? It's not Security Heavy? What's Security Heavy then?
Security Heavy is we're all doomed. It's over. It's good night. Good luck.
Put your head between your legs.
Yeah, that's it. Assume the crass position.
Okay, so Security Medium, what are the boundary conditions here?
We have something we can do to make ourselves safer, but it's not a guarantee.
Okay, so you still have to, you know, keep one eye open while you're sleeping?
Yes, but you can take some positive steps.
Okay,
this is all about the latest big buzz all over the tech press, jailbreakme.com. Just visit this website, slide your finger here, and your iPhone is jailbroken.
Yay!
This is being paraded on the press as being this fantastic, wonderful thing. Of course, they completely missed the point. This is a giant security hole in the iPhone, and they've just told every single bad guy in the world how to do it.
No, I thought jailbreaking usually did exploit... Well, it exploited a vulnerability of some sort, not a huge one necessarily.
Always, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it always exploited some sort of vulnerability. And as long as they kept it where you had to plug it in via USB for it to work, I wasn't so worried about it.
Oh, that's the difference. Okay.
I've always found it slightly worrying, and I always felt that Apple had a responsibility to block every jailbreak for the simple reason of my safety. But this takes things to a whole other level. So, a little bit of background. The iPhone... or iOS as a whole, is actually designed exceptionally intelligently from a security point of view. It's still written by humans, so it's still imperfect in how it's actually implemented, but at least they've taken a very secure design. So it actually takes a bit of effort to hack into an iPhone. One of the biggest security things is the concept of sandboxes, where every app is a little island unto itself, and apps can't interact with other apps, which makes things slightly awkward sometimes. But on the other hand, it provides us with a massive protection because in theory, if someone hacks one app, the damage is limited to that one app.
Okay.
But this is a double hack using two vulnerabilities. So hack number the first is it uses an exploit in how PDF renders fonts. Notice PDFs keep coming up because it's a terrible format.
So yeah, I'm starting to dislike PDF.
Oh, the more I learn about how PDF works on the hood, the more I hate it. But anyway, there's a mistake in how it deals with fonts, which is pretty basic. So that allows the attacker to create a custom-made PDF file that crashes Safari, which means the bad guys can then use the Safari process as their own. So they're still running as Safari rather than running as root, and they're still stuck inside Safari's little sandbox, so they're only halfway there. They then use that access to exploit another vulnerability, which allows them to break free from the sandbox and become the root user.
Are they still in Safari or no? They're out of Safari.
No,
by
they
that
break
time.
Out. They punch a hole in the sandbox.
Who cares? Okay.
Yeah, they break out of the sandbox and they get system level access. And then what they do is they go back to the original PDF and it specifies a URL. They download the script of that URL and run that script as root. And that then does the jailbreaking.
Okay.
Now, if you were a bad guy and you wanted to run any script on the iPhone to steal whatever you wanted to steal, all you have to do is write the script and then change the URL and the PDF that the jailbreak people have very kindly provided. It's a kit for basically hacking iPhones.
It's a built root kit, sort of. Well, not a root kit, but a...
It's not a root kit in the traditional sense, but it's a pre-made, ready-to-go hack for every criminal on the planet.
So would the criminals need to replicate the site that the jailbreak people have written?
Well, they just need to take the jailbreak people's PDFs, edit them a little so that they go to the URL they want them to go to for the script. They should probably change the UI because the jailbreak people make you slide your finger to unlock, but you could get rid of that bit. Just go straight to the hack. To hell with the slide your finger, are you sure bit? Because obviously as a bad guy, you don't want to do that. Or if you're a lazy bad guy, you can just, you know, make up something, you know, slide your finger here for free porn. I mean, you can get people to do anything.
Okay.
Engineering. Yeah, exactly. Or free money or a free game of poker, you name it. You know, you can get people to do all sorts of things.
Win an iPad.
So, yeah, exactly. Enter a draw to win, whatever. So either you do a bit of social engineering and you do very, very minimalist tweaks and you just change what the text says, Or you might do a little more work and simply get rid of all of the GUI altogether, make it be a 1x1 pixel iframe, and that the user sees nothing but their iPhone's taken over.
Right, right. So but, now that means websites... So all websites are scary now?
Yes. And all PDFs are suspect.
Okay, come on. That's not security light or even... I can't put that in security medium.
Okay, well...
Make it medium for us.
It's okay to look at your own PDFs, obviously.
Okay.
So if someone emails you a PDF and you've asked them, please send me whatever, and you get it in the email from them, and you know you know it's coming, yeah, whatever, go for it. You're probably fine, unless you're the world's most unluckiest person.
Or you have really evil friends.
Or you have really evil friends. In which case, you're one of the world's most unlucky people.
There you go.
And it's perfectly, well, you're probably safe to surf to your usual sort of websites.
Okay.
What I just would not do is go exploring on the iPhone. Not the appropriate moment for that. And certainly not clicking on random links in emails. Which is generally a bad idea anyway.
Yeah, but we've certainly gotten
used to it, yeah.
That we could.
Lazy.
You know, I mean, as a Mac user especially, perhaps Windows users are a little smarter when they get iPhones because they're used to being nervous and having to worry about those things. But as Mac users, we're, you know, fat, lazy, stupid people who just like, oh, I click anything and nothing bad ever happens.
Well, that's true. There's a certain level of complacency within the Mac community, unfortunately. I'm just waiting. I hope it never happens, but I'm expecting it to be beaten out of us soon.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the reasons we do the security light stuff, right, is to just keep it in the forefront a little bit.
Yeah, just be careful, you know. So really, we just have to be aware that this nasty flaw exists, and we just have to be careful.
So I would think one of the main places I might accidentally run into a PDF is when you do a Google search and then and you don't look at what the link is that's been sent to you. I make that mistake on the Mac all the time where I'm like, oh, here's the site I wanted. And then it's like, no, that isn't a site. It was a PDF. So, and I go back.
Yeah, actually, that will be very dangerous because another game bad guys like to play these days is whatever's trending in Google, they'll try to make themselves show up in those search results. Because Google has, you know, you can find out what's trendy on Google at any time.
Right.
So you attack that and you use search engine optimization techniques to try to get yourself high up the rankings on that on a Google search.
Mm-hmm.
So then you know that you're being searched for by a lot of people and you're going to show up high on the list. And that's a really good way to attack people.
Right, right. So be especially careful when doing Google searches. Look at usually Google tells you the extension so you can tell if you're going to get a PDF. So
you can't really, though, because you can include a PDF within a regular HTML page. So I wouldn't go exploring. I would not be randomly Googling on the iPhone for the next while. I guess the good news is that Apple say that they have a patch and it works.
Oh,
and they're just going to include it in a future update. But in true Apple style, they failed to mention when.
But this is getting a fair amount of attention in the security community that this vulnerability is out there, right? So
absolutely.
It's unlikely to just skip on this one for a while.
This
I
Apple.
Can't picture.
We have no idea.
Past performance. What did we just say?
Yeah, past performance is not a guide to future something or other. Anyway. I would imagine this is going to be fixed in iOS 4.1, which is in beta at the moment.
Oh, okay.
And I imagine when that's out of beta, we'll get our fix.
Now,
of course,
iPads and the iPhones are in two different revs, right?
Yes, 3.2 versus 4.0.1.
Right. So, you know, I've been wanting that 4.something update pretty quick here anyway, so maybe this will push it.
I don't think this is going to push us as far as the 4. Whatever. We probably get a 3.2.1 or something.
But okay, it's not fall. Shut up, Allison.
Yeah, it's at the end
Steve
of the day,
said
we just
fall.
Want them. He did actually. Although, as we'll be talking about in IMP Live this afternoon, no, tomorrow afternoon, there's a rumor we're getting it on August 16th.
Ooh,
just a rumor though.
I like that.
I like that too.
Let's pass it along.
Yeah, it's one of those rumors that it's really a wish rather than a rumor.
Yeah. Let's just start up the one about Verizon and then the iPhone again, right? That's what everybody does.
They just want it
to be true.
Yeah.
All right. So we've had security light. We've had security medium. We're not going to do security hard because that's just too frightening. What else we got?
And the world isn't about to end, so there's no need. Okay, next up, completely different change of topic. I think I've mentioned a few times, certainly on Twitter, that I've been on another quest, this time to find earphones or earbuds that I can use while out and about that don't fall out of my ears, that don't hurt my ears, that don't break, and that don't cost a fortune.
Oh, you're asking for a lot, Bart.
I think I am. Now, I can't figure out why this is, but iPhone headphones break on me within about 3 months. And
all my headphones break. No, I've never had headphones that last longer than that.
But that strikes me that this should be an antenna gate issue to me.
Yeah.
Headphones are all rubbish.
I buy the Sony over-the-ear clunky brown ones. They're about, I don't know, $20-25, and I have to buy them. I just bought a new pair just the other day.
What I had been doing until now is buying the cheapest pair of Sennheisers I could find, which were $9.99, and they lasted about 2 months rather than the 3 months for the Apple ones, which means I still get some slightly better value for money. Because, you know, for the price of the Apple ones, I get 4 months instead of 3 months. Yeah, dollars per month. Slightly better value. But they don't really stay in your ears very well. I do the Apple one, so I guess that's probably no different. And lately they've been giving me earache, which isn't so good. So then I did some tweetering, and people were all going on about how Frogger are this great company and they do cool stuff, and they looked all pretty on the website, so I went ahead and bought a pair. I hated them. Hated them. They were these big rubber things you're meant to wedge into your ear.
Oh, Leo Laporte always says he kind of gags when he puts those in. like they go down your throat.
Oh, and they came with three different sizes, and I tried all three different sizes, and they're all between horrible and horrific. It's like someone has their fingers in your ear. So everything sounds like you have seashells over your ears.
Oh.
Horrible. And that just feels icky. So I was highly unimpressed with those. I gave them to the better half, who proceeded to drop them on the ground and they were driven over by a car.
Just coincidentally.
Apparently. That's his story anyway. I found them in the driveway and they were both squished.
No crying over that one, though.
No crying over that one. Okay. So I bought another cheap pair of $9.99 Sennheisers and pushed it back 2 months. But the 2 months came around again, because that's what happens. It just breaks. So last weekend, I must have spent 2 hours, if not more, going through every single pair of headphones on every electronic site within the UK and Ireland that I know about. And I must have looked at hundreds of pairs of headphones. And to be honest, only one of them struck me as being interesting. All the rest of them looked fantastic until I saw the price tag. Or just looked terrible anyway.
So super high fidelity is not in your list of requirements.
I listen to podcasts.
Right. Good man.
Yeah, so I'm not interested in this music stuff on my headphones. That's just for podcasts while I'm out and about.
Okay.
So I wasn't prepared to spend €150, for example, for right. What looked like a really comfortable pair.
Because they might last 6 months, for all we know.
For all we know, they're really, really delicate, but high fidelity, and they'd last me 2 weeks.
Right.
So in the end, what I ended up with is a pair of Sennheiser, hang on, where's this exact model number?
PMX-80 Sport Series 2.
The sport thing. So what I love about these things, there's twofold, well, manyfold. They're not normal earbuds in the sense that they don't stay in your head because you wedge them in your ear, and you don't rely on having an earbud-shaped ear. They go around the top of your ears. So they stay up that way. And everyone has tops of their ears, pretty much. So that works.
Almost everyone, yes.
And then they only have one cable. So the one cable goes into the left one. And then there's a plastic band that goes around the bottom of your neck. So they don't go over your head. They go around the back of your neck to the other one. No, I like
that. That's kind of cool, yeah. It goes down your left side, it looks like.
It goes down your left side and then around your neck and then comes back up and around your right ear. And they don't really go into your ear so much as that they go against your ear. So they're sort of diagonally angled earbuds so that the sound gets sent sort of diagonally into your ear canal. And so I guess you can have big ears or small ears and you're still going to have, diagonal is still going to work.
Right.
And they're really quite comfortable.
So they don't hurt your ears when you've had them in for a long time?
They don't hurt.
They're not really in, right?
Yeah, exactly. They're not really in. They're just sort of resting against your ears. And they don't fall off, and you can jump around and do all sorts of stupid things, and because they go around the top of your ears, they're not going anywhere.
I picture you testing these.
Well, yeah, actually, pretty much. There's no way to get them off, which is great. And because I have a ponytail, they go underneath the ponytail, so the ponytail holds them down even more.
Oh, all right, right.
They're definitely going nowhere.
So the real question for me is, how secure is the joint where the cable enters the hard plastic part of the headphone? Because that's where mine break. I lose one channel.
Yeah, mine do that on the other end. I never lose them on the ear end. I always lose them on the plug end.
Oh, really?
To be honest, it doesn't look great, but because of the direction that they've put it, there's almost never going to be any stress on them because the cable is in such a way that the natural angle for it is to go straight up. So it's very unlikely you're ever going to put a bend on this.
Okay.
Because of the way they thought of where to let the plug enter the headphones.
Yeah, so the ones I use are just the cheesy, $20 Sony headphones that go over your ears and just rest against your ears like these. But then the cable goes straight down. So there isn't any bend stress, but there is flexing because when I'm running.
Okay, well, these things also have a clip that you can attach to the cable. So I just clip the clip onto the top of my jumper and then, I can do whatever I want and I'm not going to actually put any strain ever on that top connector.
Oh, that's kind of neat. By the way, tell our American audience what a jumper is.
Sweater.
Okay. In the U.S., a jumper is something a six-year-old girl wears it's sort of like a skirt with a bib part with straps over the shoulders.
Definitely not one of those.
I did have an image again of you doing it. Now I've got you leaping around with your headphones on wearing a little girl's jumper. So.
Yeah, okay then. No, definitely not. And then the other end also looks very stable.
Okay,
now,
good.
The downside is that the cable is bright, luminous orange.
Oh, a nice look.
It's really quite electric.
Well, that's all right, though.
I guess you're not going to lose them, and people are going to be in no doubt that you're listening to something.
Right, right. Well, we've all been wearing the white ones, and those sure stand out, right?
That's true. They say, rob me, I have an iPod.
Well, they used to until everybody had them in their ears.
Yeah, okay. Now if they have a little lumpy bit, it's as rub when you have an iPhone.
Right, right. All right, well, I'd like to have a report in, say, 2-3 months, see if they're still working. Because the U.S. price is $45.
Okay, according to the link, best price $30, according to your Amazon link.
That's interesting. I'm seeing... Well, that's interesting, yeah. $45 from Amazon Prime, 11 new from $34, one used from $30. I think I might use headphones.
Okay. Well, I got mine on Amazon.co.uk, but not from Amazon themselves. I got them from one of the Amazon Marketplace doohickeys.
Okay.
And I got it for €30, including shipping from the UK. I just noticed a typo in the show notes. It came from the UK, not the US.
Okay.
Actually, what also really impressed me was the packaging.
Oh, really?
No plastic.
Oh, that's nice.
It was weird. It was this solid lump of cardboard that was all wrapped up within a strip of paper. And I didn't understand this at all. So as I took it off and I opened it up, and you know the way in spy books they hide things inside books?
Right.
There was a series of stacked sheets of cardboard with different shapes cut out of them so that the headphones were perfectly cradled.
Oh, that's kind of a good idea.
And it's just, your standard, that sort of cardboard that's two layers with wiggly cardboard in between it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's mostly air. And not much of it takes up quite a big volume.
So not so a lot it was of just weight shipping or anything.
Yeah. It was a stack of those with different shapes cut out of them and the headphones resting inside it. And then just one sheet of cardboard that was in color, that was, it had the make and model on it, just wrapped around to hold it all together. And that was it.
Well, but that means you didn't endanger your life trying to cut it open.
Yeah, I know. It was wonderful.
What kind of sport is that?
I thought that was fantastically cool of them, actually.
All right. Well, I would like a report in the future to make sure that these things are still working. Because the quest, we've been teased before. Remember the finance quest? We thought we were done once before.
That is true. My quests don't always end first time.
All right. So we'll have to keep track of that.
Indeed.
Now, I did put a link in the show notes to where you can buy them on my Amazon affiliate link. If you want to help me get some little kickback there to the show, that would be lovely.
Actually, just one more good thing about them before we wrap up.
Sure.
They claim, and I haven't tested this, they claim to be sweat and water resistant.
Ooh, Ooh, I like that because
they are meant for jogging.
I sweat. No, I mean, I glow.
Well, when I'm cycling, trust me, I sweat. No glowing here.
All right, cool. What's our final subject?
Okay, so we teased this one. I don't know how many times we've teased this one. But we're having this tweet up thing in Maynooth, and we keep on telling people we'll tell you all about it, and then we keep on not having time.
Right, right.
So let's do it for real this time. So my idea is to have sort of two events in one. The first thing I want to do is about a two-hour photo walk around Maynooth. Going to meet up at 5 p.m. at the front gates of St. Patrick's College. Maynooth is a very small town. It has one big street called Main Street. At the very top of it is these giant white gates with a castle on one side and a church on the other. You're very unlikely to confuse these with any other gates. There'll also be a giant road sign saying St. Patrick's College that-a-way.
Yeah, I've been confused here. I've been looking at your photos and looking around on the web for what all this stuff looks like. And is St. Patrick's College the same as the University of Maynooth? Is one a subset of the other?
One is an offspring of the other, and one shares half of its campus with the other. So St. Patrick's College is a 215-year-old institution at this stage. It dates from 1890s sometime.
Okay.
1790s, otherwise that doesn't add up. So it's been around for a very long time.
I haven't seen anything older than about 50 years old, Bart, so it's...
Oh, yeah, lots of old stuff here. Lots of old stuff here. Middle-aged castle for a start.
So that's St. Patrick's College.
That's St. Patrick's College, and okay. They used to do both priesty stuff and normal stuff. Okay. So they had lay students and students studying to be priests.
Okay.
And in 1995, there was a law passed in Ireland called the Universities Act, which made the non-priesty bit of St. Patrick's College into a fully-fledged university in its own standing called the National University of Ireland Maynooth, or NUI Maynooth. So NUI Maynooth then bought a bunch of land on the far side of the campus where they built fancy new buildings, but that wasn't big enough, so they still actually share the pretty old side as well. So St. Patrick's College is the NUI Maynooth South Campus.
Okay, so they're the same thing?
They're the same. Yes, they're two organizations who share a campus.
Okay, which is the one you work at?
I work at the National University of Ireland. I'm not studying to be a priest.
Okay, because that is back to being all priesty stuff.
Yes, now they do have a couple of lay students, but all you can learn there is theology.
Okay, I gotcha.
Which is very interesting for those who are interested in such things, but not what I'm doing.
Right. Okay. I think I got it.
So you can follow a road sign that says NUI Maynooth South Campus, or you can follow a road sign that says St. Patrick's College Maynooth, and they'll both take you to right the same place.
Okay, so can I use them synonymously? Would I be horribly incorrect?
You're more specific if you say St. Patrick's College, because that's definitely where we're going to be, rather than the other half, which is only NUI Maynooth. But the front gates of the college, they're really, really, really hard to miss, and you can ask any random stranger on the street and they'll all know where it is.
Okay. Well, hopefully you'll never lose sight of Steve and I while we're there, because if we do, that would not be good.
This will be on your second day here, so you'll be totally at home.
Ah, we'll be just strolling around the neighborhood, just hanging out, no problem, huh?
Yeah, you'll be fine. So we'll be at the front gates at 5 o'clock for anyone who'd like to join us. I don't actually want to set in stone exactly what we're going to go take pictures of, because I want to leave that open to people's preferences and the realities of the weather and whether or not things like the castle are open.
So there's a reasonable chance we'll either be looking at butterflies, canals, or old cool-looking buildings?
Or all of the above, yeah.
Or possibly trains?
I wasn't planning on doing a train one, but...
Okay, trains are in a different place. That's okay.
Well, no, if people really want, we're about 5 minutes walk away from trains, but somehow I didn't think that would appeal.
Okay. That sounds really fun. What I like is that each of the different tweet-ups in the three countries are going to have a completely different flavor. You know, Nightwise is going to make us drink coffee, but you have other plans for after the photo walk?
Yeah, so after the photo walk, which is the optional beginning, is just
the other
go to
part's
a bar.
Mandatory, by the way.
Well, if you're coming along, the other part's the real part. One other reason actually to come along to the photo walk rather than the later bit is if you're under the age of 18 and can't enter a bar, then we'll be outside for the 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. bit, Whereas at 7 p.m. we'll be going to the Clockhouse Bar on Main Street, Maynooth. And that's a bar, which means that if you're under 18, you may not get let in if the barman is feeling in a obeying the law kind of mood.
Oh.
See, which is not a given in Ireland, I will grant you.
That's interesting. In the United States, if it serves food, you can go in at any age.
Yeah, the law in Ireland keeps changing on these things. It used to be the case that all the kids were in the bar all the time, and then someone realized this was very bad parenting because parents were just taking the kids to the bar and getting drunk.
not the best idea.
Not the best idea. So there's a certain time, but I don't know what time it is, after which kids aren't allowed in the bar.
Ah, okay.
Now, that may be 9 p.m., in which case this may all just be pointless anyway, but if you're in any way concerned that you won't be let into the bar, we'll be outside at 5 p.m., and outside is free.
There we go. And the and the bar is, again?
It's the Clockhouse Bar, which is attached to Brady's Bar. Brady's Bar was an old, small bar, and then they built a giant, big extension, and they called the extension the Clockhouse. So we'll be in the new bit. There's one square in Maynooth. It's there. It's called the Clockhouse, in big writing over the door.
I put a link in the show notes to where it is. It looks lovely. It looks perfect.
It's a good Irish pub.
Steve is concerned, though. He wants to make sure the clocks are set properly. That worried him a little bit.
I'm not even sure there is a clock in the Clockhouse. I have no idea why it's called that, because I haven't seen any clocks.
Uh-oh.
One of the reasons I chose it is because they have a nice bar food menu. So if people want to eat something, they can.
Excellent.
And they do good beer, because it's Ireland, so you know, you'll have that.
There you go. That sounds fantastic. I'm really looking forward to it. I hope people come out. Have we heard from the MacCrack lads yet?
I haven't, but I shall be reminding them.
They've been rather silent. We've mentioned them. You'd think they'd be...
Well, yeah, they've been on holidays and stuff.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, as long as they're back in time for the tweet-up, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I'm sure they will be. Now, I haven't booked anything here, so we're just going to be a bunch of people going to the bar. So don't expect giant banners and reserved areas. It's just going to be us in the bar having a chat.
Well, Steve, in his efforts to continuously make me more stressed out about packing, suggested that I bring the banner that George from Tulsa had made for me, this giant, heavy vinyl banner, and carry it in my luggage.
That's not an option, or you're going to have no clothes.
There's that. And I'm stressed on that, too. So anyway.
Well, yeah, because the weight restrictions on your intra-European flights are restrictive.
It's going to kill us.
Unless you want to send the banner ahead by courier.
Well, somebody suggested that I'm going to need to courier ahead my orbital polisher so that I can wax Don's car.
Well, I don't have a car, so you can then... That gives you a couple of extra days to courier it from Don to Nightwise.
There you go. I could polish your bike.
No, actually, I keep my bike really dirty, so it doesn't look like you'd want to steal it.
Ah, there you go. All right.
It's actually a really nice mountain bike, but if it looks cruddy, who's going to nick it?
There you go. All right. Well, I think that's going to... have we covered everything?
That's the notes. Exhausted, which I guess means we're done.
All right, Bart. Well, I think we have one more home show. Maybe two. Two more home shows, right?
Two more normal weeks and then non-normality.
Right. We have one on the 14th and the 21st. And then, we should say what's going to be really exciting. We have figured out that we're going to do Chit Chat Across the Pond. Will take place on the 28th, but it will be Bart and I in Ireland with Katie over in the United States as the other side of the pond.
Yes, it should be fun. We're going to try to use your Zoom H2 mic so that the two of us can talk at once and...
We'll see if that works.
Each ear of a pair of earbuds or something. I don't know how we're going to do the headphones bit.
Especially with your new headphones. That'll be a trick. Well, I've got a splitter. I wonder if that would work.
Splitter would be... If it's small and light, that'd be great.
It's really tiny. It's like an inch across. I'm going to add it to my Zenby list right now.
Excellent.
I haven't listed anything about clothes, but I've got my non-packing. You know, I've got things like... Oh, I've already got it. Headphone splitter for listening at Bart's Drink CCATP. How smart
That's
am
very
I?
Specific.
Yes, I know. We must have layers, said this last week. Layers.
Layers. That's what you need to put down on your list. Layers. Lots of layers.
Yeah. But they have to be smart. Oh, and also Nightwise suggested, he sent an image. I need that link from you again because I didn't get it from him, but it's a picture of a rather attractive woman wearing a Star Trek tunic that's extremely short, and that's what he suggested I pack.
But, and extremely red.
Well, that's why Steve said I can't have it, you know.
Yeah, you're going on an away mission. You're not wearing red.
There's that. That's all there is to it. All right, Bart. Well, we'll talk to you again next week then.
Indeed we will. And until then, happy computing.
Well, that looks like it's going to wrap it up for this week. Be sure to work on some review projects for Katie so she doesn't have too hard of a time. Realize she's going to be busy trying to corral the chat room, making sure they're in stay in line, and, you know, so she really does need some content for the show. Speaking of the live chat, if you find yourself not too busy at 5 p.m. Pacific time on a Sunday night, why don't you head on over to podfeed.com/live and join us. It's lots of fun. The crowd is friendly. They occasionally listen to me actually creating the show and find the mistakes I'm making, like you heard this week. So you really should go check it out. It's so much fun. In the meantime, be sure to keep those dumb questions coming, along with feedback about the show, to Allison@podfeet.com. And be sure to follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/podfeet. Thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.